Got it. All right. So today we're pleased to have Jane Ellery. She's the Associate Director and Assistant Professor, the Fisher Institute for Wellness and Gerontology at Ball State University. She joined the faculty of Fisher Institute in August of 2003. She received her PhD in public health and has served in many community-based health and wellness capacities. Bringing with her experience in workplace wellness, managed care administration, workers' compensation programming, community-based cardiac rehabilitation, and hospital-based cardiovascular diagnostics. Jane serves as a program coordinator for the Wellness Management Graduate Program. Her major interests include encouraging students to experiment with different ways to use technology in wellness management practice and working to develop partnerships to ensure consumer-centered approaches for wellness initiatives and research practices. Pleased to have Jane here today. Jane?
Thank you very much, and I'm going to have to update that to add this primacy of place idea because it's certainly my new passion. I'm really lucky to be joined here today with two of my dear colleagues here at Ball State. Excuse me. They actually come from the business affairs side, so if any of you are familiar with colleges, it's very rarely that the academic affairs and the business affairs people play very well together. So it's been really transformative for me to have these guys with me, and they're the primacy of place people. I'm the community well-being person, or they're part of that too. But it's Delana Boyd from Building Better Communities and Krista Flynn from Building Better Communities, and you'll hear more from them as we get further into the presentation. Ball State has this primacy of place initiative that we're really excited to be putting out in front of everyone. It's a brand new initiative. We literally had our first kickoff at the end of September. So I want to thank Michaela and the crew at HP Live for allowing us to come on and talk about this. Many of you know Michaela is a grad of the program that I teach in, so we really appreciate all that she does to help support us in moving forward.
You're welcome.
I want to take the first few minutes to identify a few concepts, just so we're kind of talking the same language as we work through this presentation. And the concepts that I want to introduce are community, economic development, and primacy of place. When you think about community, you think about a group of people that are defined within the context of, it could be a geography, it might be a neighborhood, a town, a region, or a state. You can also think of them within the context of an institution or setting, which could include a workplace or a medical practice. Or even if you're looking virtually, it could be through a web portal or some other kind of setting. You can also look at it within the context of a demographic or a characteristic like seniors or outdoor enthusiasts or smartphone users. So what we want you to think about today, we're really talking about the geography of a neighborhood or a county, but the practices and ideas that we're sharing with you can fit in all of these other settings as well. I also want to touch on economic development. I'm not an economist, so this is the world according to Jane Ellery as she's thinking about it. But when you think about community economic prosperity, there are really two economies that are really key. We've got the money economy that talks about jobs and goods and services as well as financial incentives. And we've got the core economy that talks about homes and families and neighborhoods. And both are equally important, or we need to value both equally. Unfortunately, in our society, the money economy takes over in so many situations. And if you think about it, a strong core economy, including healthy children, functioning families, safe neighborhoods, viable communities, and a strong civic society, produces the workforce that the money economy needs to generate goods and services. On the other hand, the money economy produces the goods and services that people rely on for their survival. So things like food, shelter, and clothing. When either one of our economies is in the downward spiral, we feel the effects across the board. And many individuals out there want to strengthen the money economy side of the equation by enticing businesses to relocate into communities with the expectation that the money and the people will follow. That isn't wrong, it's just not complete. What we want to argue here today, and there are many others arguing this, of course, as well, is that focusing on strengthening the core economy is equally important. A vital core economy creates a great place for people to live, work, and play, and the businesses will then choose to relocate to these great places. As we take a closer look at this great place idea, I want to revert back to Halbert Dunn's work, which when I was introduced to the concepts of wellness, when I came to Ball State University, I'd heard about Halbert Dunn, but I hadn't really spent time looking into his work. This past year, as we've been thinking about this Primacy of Place initiative, I spent a lot more time going back to these foundations. And when you think about Halbert Dunn, he was an MD and a PhD. He helped establish our National Center for Vital Statistics and the data systems within our functioning. But he also recognized that this wasn't enough to change the health and well-being of individuals. And he started giving some presentations that resulted in his publishing the book High Level Wellness in 1961. And I'm going to pull, you know, we talk about the medical model. This is something that we're talking about in addition to the medical model. So I'm going to pull his definition, which is basically an integrated method of functioning, which is oriented to maximizing the potential of which an individual is capable within the environment where he is functioning. And I look at this as maximizing human potential. So we really want to figure out ways that we can get the best out of everyone. And as you look at some of his work, this is a piece from 1959 that you can get online. Once you get this presentation, there's actually a link to the document. But some of the four key points that he talks about in this particular document is that it's a shrinking world. And keep in mind, this is 1959. But he talks about how communication time has shrunk to a vanishing point. He also talks about how it's a crowded world, that population growth brings with it new health problems that arise from population pressures and the scarcities of the materials and living spaces. It's an older world. People are living longer. And this has created a steadily advancing per capita demand on productivity, which of course results in mounting tensions because the tempo of our modern life is so fast that it's really placed great demands on human beings and the society. So certainly as we think about primacy of place, it's rooted back to the origins of wellness and the wellness movement. So people have been thinking about this for a long time. More recently, many of you may be familiar with the Blue Zones, and where Dan Buettner went all over the world to find out what helped people live the healthiest for the longest. And the items that they identified, which they refer to as their power of nine, include moving naturally, having the right outlook, eating wisely, and connecting with others. So it's real important to follow through on all of these as you're thinking about living healthy for a long time.
Pardon me, Jane.
What's interesting, did you say that something?
Yeah, we seem to have something funky going on with your slides. We're only seeing like the top left corner. Are you showing slides or are you showing?
Okay, I'm showing slides.
Okay.
Let me see if I can change my screen resolution real quick to change that.
We were just talking about it, and a lot of people have. Okay, somebody said they just rebooted go to webinar, rebooted their computer and reloaded go to webinar, and it worked.
Is that better?
No.
Okay. I can't change the screen resolution. I tried that earlier. We'll go back to the Blue Zones. As we look at the power of nine, you want to move naturally, have the right outlook, eat wisely, and connect. And what's interesting is that people in the Blue Zone areas don't try to do these things. They actually exhibit these behaviors naturally because the surroundings around them encourage them constantly to make the healthiest choices, nudge them toward activities that improve their well-being. So we've adopted those ideas as we think about primacy of place. And at Ball State, we're defining primacy of place as a community's strategic choice to dedicate its resources toward the improvement of life experiences for residents, businesses, and visitors. And of course, place means different things to different people. I want you to think for a minute about what place might mean to you. Does it mean the physical characteristics of a place? Or the things you can do in that place? The people in the place, the food, or the sights and sounds and smells. What's important to think about with placemaking is it's the emotional connection you have to a place, not necessarily the place itself. So as we talk about placemaking here today, I want you to think about rethinking the way you go about change. And one of my favorite TED Talks, I've added some TED Talks throughout the presentation because they can help you expand on the thinking that kind of led to what created the foundation for where we're going. So this one is How Great Leaders Inspire Action by Simon Sinek. And he talks a lot about it's not what you do, it's how you do it. So I want to talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to take a look at some of the primacy of place resources that we have available to you from here at Ball State. One of my favorite groups that's working in this placemaking area is the Project for Public Spaces. And they define placemaking as a multifaceted approach to the planning, design, and management of public spaces. Put simply, it involves looking at, listening to, and asking questions of the people who live, work, and play in a particular space to discover their needs and aspirations. This information is then used to create a common vision for that place. So if you look through some of the Project for Public Spaces works, and Delana and Chris are going to show you a few different items that they have at the end, but Placemaking Chicago is putting these resources together and doing some amazing things to really transform the place in the Chicagoland area. If you think about the goal of placemaking as being to invite greater interaction between people and to foster healthier, more social and economically viable communities, then you fit right in with what Project for Public Spaces is thinking and talking about. I like to define space as a physical description of a location or environment, whereas place is an emotional tie to that location or environment. And we're really focusing on moving toward place. What's interesting is, you've got a lot of landscape architects and urban designers that are really designing some great spaces, but there's not necessarily an emotional tie to those. So it's really bringing both the design, the function, and the people all together. Project for Public Spaces has identified 11 principles of placemaking. I've listed them here, and you can take a little closer look at some of the documents that they have if you want to look more closely at the information. As we think about this moving forward, we also want to make sure that we provide leadership. And leadership in this kind of an initiative may look a little different than some of the other functions that you've been associated with. The things I want to talk about here for a few minutes, I want you to think about social and financial contracts. The social contract is much more consistent with a core economy activity versus the financial contract that fits within the money economy thinking. We'll also talk a little bit about organizing people. And finally, I want to introduce you to a term, and if any of you have heard me talk before, maybe reintroduce you to the term co-production, where we're engaging our community and expanding our reach. A great TED Talk, again, that led to some of my thinking. Many of you will come to realize I am a TED Talk junkie. I hope you're enjoying the wonderful ideas worth sharing, or worth spreading, excuse me, that come from that. But Clay Shirky talks about institutions versus collaborations. So if you want to expand, have a little bit more information about some of the concepts that I'm talking about here, you can certainly go and listen to this TED Talk by him. He has a few of them. When you think about a financial versus a social contract, sometimes I think when we start talking about incentives and some of the concepts around incentive, we don't see the full picture. So I want to introduce you to this particular discussion today by talking about a study that was done with people who were picking their kids up from daycare. Many of us have experienced the stress of trying to get off work in time to get there in time so you're not late. So this is kind of a universal experience. And one group wanted to say, oh, if we start fining parents for being late, what's that going to look like? So they started with 4 weeks. They developed two groups. They got a control group that they didn't change anything, and then an experimental group where they introduced a fine. And what's interesting, most people thought that when that fine was introduced, that people would stop being late. But in fact, what happened was the exact opposite. You see here the black line is the group that received the fine. And when they talked to the parents said, you know, I used to worry that people weren't going to get home in time, so I had this social reason for picking my kid up from school. But once I started to be able to pay for the opportunity to be late, I no longer worried about picking my kid up on time because, you know, I was paying for the additional services. So it was interesting that the fine became just an opportunity to remove themselves from the social contract. What also happened was after the fine was removed, the culture had changed, so consequently, the late behavior continued. So often we introduce financial incentives to try to help improve behavior, and we end up changing culture maybe in a way that we weren't expecting. What our primacy of place thinking, we really go in and think about the communities and the people in the community, and we try to design for the generosity of the people in the community and really think about that social contract versus the financial contract, because, you know, we're never going to have enough money to do what we need to do to improve health and well-being for the people in our community. It also takes a different kind of method for organizing people. And again, you know, both of these, just like financial and social contracts are both important, we have to value both. Planning and coordination are also both important. When you're in a financial contract situation or a money economy, a lot more of what we do is related to planning, and we hire people to do work versus necessarily coordinating people that may want to do this work anyway and just be part of contributing to the greater good of society. So if we think about organizing people as, in this particular case, they talked about having people take pictures of a setting. And what's interesting, when you're planning, that's what you can hire people. And here they hired two people. You can see the two red lines. And both went out and took pictures. One took lots of pictures, and one took quite a few pictures. You know, one took not quite as many, but still quite a few pictures. They also had a contest where they introduced a platform where they coordinated real people in the real world submitting pictures of the same site. And what they found was some people down on this end only made a single contribution. Others made quite a few contributions to the site. So both resulted in getting a good number of pictures. And both are important ways of collecting information and relying on people to help move your ideas forward. I would argue that the planning, again, not exclusively, but it's more related to that financial contract and the money economy, whereas the coordination really thinks about the social contract and how to bring people together who just want to do good by their community. The last term that I mentioned was this idea of co-production. And in co-production, it was coined by Eleanor Ostrom, who was the only female who's ever won the Nobel Prize for Economics. She won the Nobel Prize in 2009. She's actually recently passed away but was a faculty member at Indiana University. And she talked about the design and implementation of a program through collaborative decisions between a client and a service professional. She talked quite extensively about how the police profession changed when police officers went from walking the beat and getting to know the individuals in a community to being in cars where they drove around and didn't necessarily establish the relationship. So again, she talks about how important relationships are in moving the ideas forward that you want to use. So when you're co-producing services, it means that you're bringing the individuals who you're trying to help in and having them be part of the solution. And there are lots of ways that you can do that, especially in this coordination model that we talked about. Maybe there are different tools and different skills that you need to develop as you're working through that. Interestingly, one of the groups that we work with here in Indiana is out of Purdue University, and they have a practice that they're calling strategic doing, where you can bring individuals from a community together to say, where do we want to go? And then everyone leaves with a single item that they have to do before the next session. And then when they come back together, they say, oh, how successful were we in getting there, and what's our next step? So you really only plan 30 days or 7 days or however often you're meeting in advance, rather than necessarily planning for the next 5 years like so many of us are known for doing. This co-production term, I think, can be really key as we think about placemaking initiatives within our primacy of place involvement. And you can get more information about that through the New Economics Foundation or some Fisher Institute students that graduated a few years ago were put together a great review of some of the co-production literature, and you can find that here on this website. Community well-being and primacy of place have given me an opportunity to bring together a lot of thinking that I've done over the years related to well-being, and even I come from a public health and clinical practice background as well. And it's really been exciting for me to think about the opportunities that come into play because we have this new way of thinking that can allow us to work with people in our community. And what I found is as you talk with individuals in the community, we've been working for a long time to try to improve health and well-being, and we haven't had a lot of success. Well, these kind of opportunities make intuitive sense to them as well. So I'm starting to think about the Community Well-Being and Primacy of Place Initiative, at least, like I said, just this community well-being piece. I've talked with the folks at Building Better Communities. To me, primacy of place is community well-being, but there are so many other people working in this too, and they're going to talk about that a little bit more in just a minute. But borrowing from Halbert Dunn, I want to figure out how we can maximize the potential of a community, and that's what we're really working toward. So with this, I'm going to turn over the controls to Krista Flynn. She's going to walk you through some of the information on our website. And Delana Boyd is going to talk with you about some of the resources that are available here.
Thank you, Jane. Just to set things in context a little bit, we represent a unit here at Ball State University called Building Better Communities. You can think about our unit being a portal or a window or a door to the vast resources that we have here at Ball State. Our job is to connect the talented students and faculty that we have here at the university to the folks in the business community or in local communities throughout the state, as well as our economic development and professional partners across the state of Indiana. Over the last couple of years, my colleagues in the Economic and Community Development Division have been exploring and looking and conducting quite a bit of research and coming to the realization that our traditional economic development practices are really insufficient in and of themselves to produce sustained quality economic growth in our communities, which led then to the development of the Primacy of Place Initiative. We thought we might take a moment to show a video that was prepared This is our Associate Vice President in charge of Economic Development and Community Engagement, introducing the Primacy of Place initiative at Ball State.
Over the past 25 years, Ball State University has led the way in community economic development throughout the state of Indiana. We've been privileged to work with community leaders and communities along these lines. We've also learned an awful lot about the strategies and practices that work in community economic development.
More and more, people are choosing the places they want to live and the jobs are following those people in that movement. Talent is the single most important driver of a community's economic performance, and quality of place is a primary factor in a community's ability to attract and retain that talent. The most prosperous places in the country and the most prosperous places in Indiana are all residential communities.
The name for this initiative is Primacy of Place. Primacy of Place represents a community's choice to dedicate resources toward the improvement of its quality of life. The focus for the initiative is to create communities where the best and the brightest will choose to live.
In recognition of this important shift, we're placing more and more emphasis on helping community leaders improve their quality of place so that they can improve their economic performance.
We believe in Indiana, and we believe in Hoosier communities, and that's why we're dedicating our resources toward their betterment. Our Primacy of Place initiative dedicates the resources of this university toward this important statewide effort.
So that's a nice introduction to what we're calling our Primacy of Place initiative, which has a number of elements, and I might share a little bit about those. We completed an awards program earlier this year. There's also a conference that we completed just last month. We spent some time developing resources and bringing folks together under what we're calling extended knowledge groups, as well as putting together a best practices database. I might talk a little bit about the awards program. We had put our heads together and decided one of the ways that we needed to help bring some recognition to the wonderful things that are going on, at least throughout our state, is to start to recognize those through an awards program. This is the first year for the program and thought we might get a handful of applicants. We were surprised by the number of individuals who spent the time to complete those applications and were astounded at the incredibly creative, innovative approaches that are being used throughout our state to address some of these place-making initiatives and some of the activities that are going on in the communities. The three award winners this year, the City of Columbus, the City of Valparaiso, and the Town of Walkerton, the City of Columbus was recognized because of the efforts that they've been making towards the development of a thriving arts district. In fact, they've put together more than 360 arts programs and cultural assets in that community. The City of Valparaiso was recognized for the work that they did in preserving hundreds of acres of parkland that was adjacent to their city, as well as the implementation of what they were calling a Fit City program, which emphasized hiking and other outdoor recreation activities. The final applicant and award winner, the Town of Walkerton, was dwarfed in size in terms of the numbers of folks you see there. They had a population of a little over 2,100 versus the tens of thousands in the cities that won the other two awards. But the Town of Walkerton took scarce resources that they had, combined those with some state and federal resources, and transformed an old blighted area of their community. There were some homes that were built, plywood homes built back in the 40s as the folks were returning from the war. And over time, these buildings had become dilapidated and were very, very inefficient in terms of the ability to heat and cool those spaces. The resources were combined, those neighborhoods were leveled, and in place you see a new, attractive, very affordable neighborhood that now is known as Dogwood Estate. So even very small communities can pull together to make some very transformational changes. So we're pleased with the award winners, pleased with the turnout, and again, astounded by the creative, innovative ways that we're approaching these activities throughout our state. The Primacy of Place Conference was held just about a month ago, and it was designed to bring together business and civic leaders to share information on developing and attracting and retaining talent through quality of place activities. We were pleased that we were able to have Fred Kent with the Project for Public Spaces. Jane mentioned a little bit about Fred earlier. Fred runs a nonprofit in New York which is dedicated to helping people create and sustain public places that build strong communities. Another element of the Primacy of Place initiative are the extended knowledge groups. We know that there are a number of talented people both here at the university and throughout the state, and as we grow this throughout the nation, that are dedicated to particular areas of the primacy of place under the umbrella that we have. Six of those this year and another to be rolled out later were brought under the headings of arts integration and community economic development. You see community collaboration for educational excellence, community design, community readiness for change, our group, community well-being, and then municipal governance. So these are folks who are interested in these topic areas coming together to share information, share resources, and develop dissemination strategies. Jane and Krista and I, over the course of the summer, as well as our colleagues in the other extended knowledge groups, spent time, in some cases, in Jane's case in particular, going back through our bookshelves and finding some of our favorite resources, but quite a bit of time looking on the internet and other places to start to pull together some resources under each of these headings. You'll see that the Community Well-Being Group has organized our work under how-to guides, data sources, reports and white papers, books, TED Talks, and then organizations that are dedicated to these areas. The database is searchable, as you'll see, through a Control F function or Command F if you're running a Mac. We thought we might just walk you through a few of some of our favorite resources on the Community Well-Being database. One of those, and if Krista will just type in Blue Zone. Jane mentioned earlier Dan Buettner's work. Here's an opportunity to learn a little bit more about the Blue Zones book. But what's interesting about this website, you see a lot of additional resources. One of the things that I appreciate about this is the free study guide that's available. This will help with leading discussions or even in your own examination of what that book has to offer. The website also offers an opportunity to learn more about the power of nine. Jane mentioned that briefly during her presentation. Here's an opportunity to go back and learn quite a bit more then about those elements. The last piece that I'll point out on this website is the Vitality Compass. And through a series of 36 or so easy-to-answer questions, you can calculate what they're calling your biological age, your overall life expectancy, your health life expectancy, and the years that you can gain or lose because of the health habits that you are using throughout your life. Another resource I know that we mentioned quite a bit, and we're big fans of the Project for Public Spaces, so if Krista just keys in Project for Public Spaces, we can take you to the main website for that organization. I just want to point out a couple of resources there, hoping to pique your interest, and you'll go back later and learn more about these organizations and resources that are there. But under the Resources tab, there are a number of what we feel are very well-developed, easy-to-read reports. And what I want to point out there is the Power of 10. Jane mentioned that briefly in her presentation. Here's an opportunity to learn more about that and how easy that is to implement and how easy it would be to implement, not just in a community endeavor, but even Jane pointed out to us the other day that we needed to use the Power of 10 on our own website in what we're developing, Primacy of Place 2.0, that we need to have 10 places for folks to stop on the website and 10 important pieces of information to learn along the way. So that has a lot of flexibility, we feel, in terms of how we can apply this. I know that we're talking to a national audience today, but we have a group here in Indiana called the Wellness Council of Indiana. You probably have similar groups in your state. This is a statewide membership-based organization that serves as a clearinghouse and a resource center for workplace wellness. Our friend Chuck Gillespie, we think, has done an incredible job of pulling together resources, and I know many of the resources are available only to those folks who are members, but there are a number of free resources that, to Chuck's credit, he's opened up to a lot of folks, and we wanted to bring those to your attention today as well. And they're broken down under these headings of physical well-being, career well-being, community, social, smoking cessation, and financial wellness. So here's an opportunity to go back and have access to a number of resources that would be beneficial in your work. The last piece that I would mention and point out on our website are the TED Talks. It's easy to hear from our conversations today that Jane has converted us as well, and we're TED Talk junkies too here in Building Better Communities. We put together a number of TED Talks, but you'll see these are collections of talks under particular keywords or particular topic areas. These are beneficial for running, we have a client here in town who's running a lunch and learn series with these, simply running discussion groups and having a starting point for discussion, and or just simply a motivational talk to get you up and moving or to create a little more open thinking around some areas. So we appreciate the time today and are pleased to have had the opportunity to share with you the Primacy of Place initiative and the work that we're doing here at Ball State.
So
wonderful.
Excuse me. We get back on the right one. So I'm going to go back for just a second. So as we think about primacy of place, it literally is just a different way of thinking about change in your community. You can have tools that you use to bring people together, and we've tried to present some of those to you here on our databases and show you how to access those. We're also very interested in having you send us any resources that are related that we may be able to take a look at, review, and add to our databases. We want to continuously update, not in an overwhelming way, because that's one of the things that I keep saying too, is we can't have 4 million resources. We just need a few that are really best practices in this area. But we know from all of you and the great work and creative work that you're doing that you probably have ideas of what some of the great TED Talks out there. There are over 1,500 of them now, so it's not like you can see all of them. And someone asked me once, what's your favorite TED Talk? And of course my comment to that is the one I watched yesterday. I can't tell you what that is, but you know, each one I like a little better than the next, but then when I go back and watch an old one that I haven't seen for a while, I like it best again. So there are just creative things that help you think. So we want to borrow this concept of extended knowledge groups, of borrowing ideas from all of you as we create this in going forward. So certainly, if you could send us ideas that we might, that you might think were good for us to post on our website, that would be hugely helpful to us. And we will take a few minutes here for questions, and of course I'm a faculty member, so I can sit for a long time and wait, but we have a lot of questions for you also, that if you don't have questions of us, we would like to pick your brains a little bit in the last 15 minutes of our session here today.
Okay, well we do have a couple of questions. And somebody submitted one specifically earlier, and I accidentally deleted it. So Kelly, if you could read that one, that would be awesome. You know, you start clicking, you go crazy. But we do have one from Bill. Bill says, wants to know, what are some good tools for assessing and or measuring community well-being besides the Gallup Healthways Well-Being Index?
You know, that's a great question, and we're working right now to identify some different constructs that can be used to develop place, but I have to admit, I like the ones that the Gallup organization is using the best. If you look at their constructs around hope and resilience and well-being, those seem to be the ones that resonate most with monitoring change across time. There are other tools out there that we're borrowing ideas from as we're trying to create a tool that we can use, especially here in the Muncie community, as we're trying to put some of these practices into place locally. And we also like Judd Allen's work with wellness culture coaching and some of the borrowing some of the ideas that he's using for healthy culture in workplaces and applying those to healthy communities and thinking around healthy communities. So those are two that really stand out in my mind as far as how we're thinking about how we're going to measure this going forward.
Yeah, actually we have three webinars from Judd talking about that kind of stuff. And we also, which reminds me, Kelly, we got to get on Gallup and get them back in here for their annual update. So did you find the question,
yes,
Kelly?
Do. Is it from Bill McPack?
No, there was another one.
Oh, I have another one from Bill.
Oh, maybe it was Bill. Maybe I just didn't see it. Okay. Well, let's go with Bill, who asked some of the very best questions around.
Okay. He wants to know, aren't well-being and the original definitions of wellness as reflected in the various wellness models the same thing?
Oh, goodness, Bill. You know, that's probably a topic for a completely different webinar, and I would probably agree with you, Bill. I've looked at wellness and well-being and have had some of our students. I think we've had this conversation before as well, so I appreciate it. But I'm not sure of the nuances, and I'm probably not completely sure of how I would define well-being yet, so I didn't really offer a definition of that. Maybe, Bill, we should get together and come up with some definitions, and we'll come back on in a few months, and we can do something along those lines to think about definitions and interchangeability of terms and all that good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, good luck with that. I mean, I think there'd be a lot of people interested in that, but that sounds difficult, to say the least. Let's see, Tammy wants to know, how do you use healthcare systems working with the community on increasing community well-being?
Did you say healthcare systems?
Systems, yes.
You know, interestingly, I can only come back to what we're doing here in Muncie. And we're really lucky in Muncie in that we have a single hospital group that's part of the IU Health system. We've got IU Health Ball Memorial Hospital. And as they're moving toward becoming an accountable care organization, they're very interested in being part of the efforts that we've got going on to improve community and improve places in our community that will foster healthier choices and healthier actions. We have one particular community here on the northeast side of town. It's our Whiteley neighborhood. And they're doing, it's a predominantly African-American low-income area that is just doing some amazing things. If you look at this community, probably more so than most other communities in Muncie, they definitely have an emotional attachment to the place. And the people who grow up in Whiteley, like living in Whiteley, want to come back to Whiteley, it's really intriguing to see. And as they're working together to enhance their education system, you know, they've identified their community as a community where you go to college. That's just part of what it means to grow up in the Whiteley community. They've identified their community as a vibrant community. So we're learning a lot of what we're trying to help other neighborhoods establish in their neighborhoods. We're learning a lot from what's going on in Whiteley to help us know what can work and how to find the leaders. And IU Health Ball Memorial Hospital has been a key player in that. So we definitely want to work in partnership wherever we go with the local health system. Our local federally qualified health center is a key partner. In fact, the CEO of our Open Door Health Services is a co-chair on many of the different committees and involved in all of what we're doing as well. So it's a whole community coming together around these ideas, and it includes the health systems just as much as it includes the business and the individuals living in the community. We've got to all work together to co-produce the change that we want to see.
All right. Well, I guess dovetailing quite nicely, thank you, Gail, to that is she wants to know, how do nonprofits figure into your thinking and planning?
You know, interestingly, Muncie, I think, has more nonprofits per capita than any other place in the United States. And we have lots of partners. As I said, What's nice about this way of thinking is most of the organizations that are trying to improve health and well-being of the population they serve, they can buy into improving place, and they can figure out ways that what their organization is already doing fits within what we're asking them to do. One of the groups that I work with here in town that I really enjoy working with, because I think parenting interventions are really key, and we've got a group called Parents Encouraging Parents. You know, how do we create a great place so we can have the best parents in the United States living here in Muncie? That has a huge impact on how children are raised and what happens. Because, you know, in that Birth to Five time, we've got Birth to Five initiatives going on. We're really trying to use this thinking as a way to bring so many people who are already doing this great work. And in some cases, they're doing it in that that money economy setting. But we're trying to figure out ways that we can coordinate them and really looking at this core economy and core values and what we want for a community. And, you know, as I've been involved in the community now for 10 years. I moved to Muncie about 10 years ago. And I've spent a lot of time finding out what people want and their hopes and ideas. And this concept just helps solidify a path. One of the other resources you'll find in the book section of our resources is the book Switch. We really have to shape the path. And if you've read the book Switch, you can understand that. But this just gives us a way to shape the path that a lot of people can get within that path and figure out how to align what they're already doing, the great things they're already doing, to continue to progress our community forward. Do we get to ask questions now?
Sorry, I did it again. I was talking with my microphone off. Very useful. Okay, yeah, sure, ask questions. And if people want to respond, either raise your hand and I can unmute you, or just type your answers or comments, whatever, into the chat box. So take it away, Jane.
So I guess the first question, we've already asked you to send us resources. So you can send those through the chat box, or you can send them directly to me. But if you're hearing about this concept for the first time, and I know we've got a lot of innovators on here that have been working in this area, but if you're hearing about this concept for the first time, what's your initial reaction? And if you're not hearing about this concept for the first time, I'm going to introduce all of these so you can have some time to type if you're not going to raise your hand and talk to us directly. If you're not hearing about this for the first time, how many of you have placemaking initiatives underway in your communities? What are some of the successes you've faced? What are some of the challenges? And what can we do to help you take next steps forward? So we can address all of these, and you can type related to the ones that are most exciting to you. Or please raise your hand, because I would love to have direct interaction as well.
Okay, Tammy, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep. I love it when a plan comes together. Go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you. This is Tammy. I'm calling from Anchorage, Alaska. Hello, everyone. We have a really amazing initiative that's starting in our community. It was actually started by our Economic Development Committee that oversees, you know, obviously economic development, and it's called Live, Work, Play, Making Anchorage the Best Place to Live, Work, Play by 2025. And I'm co-chairing the effort around, we originally started around workplace well-being, which is kind of what I do in my real job. But as I've really gotten into it, I think that it's really broader to community well-being. And this was so timely, and I so appreciate the information. We do have, as one of the efforts, we call it creative placemaking. And so there's a whole effort around the artist community and the things that they've been doing with that. And I'm happy to share and send the link to the Live, Work, Play initiative that we've been doing here. We're fairly new into the game, but to share it with others on the webinar. But just wanted to say thank you so much for all of this great information, and I hope that I can reach out maybe personally to to you to get a couple specific questions maybe answered, but thank you.
Absolutely, Tammy. We would love to connect with you. We're looking for, you know, people that are passionate about this, that want to continue to help us build knowledge around this. That's what our extended knowledge group really is about, and it sounds like you'd be perfect to be part of that.
Well, that's awesome. I hope that we all can hear more about that. Let's see. Christy said she recommended a resource being Seligman's work in flourishing, or Flourish. Are you aware of that?
Absolutely. I love the work in flourishing, and I think that fits. She's exactly right. That fits within this whole area of conceptualization, too. Thank you.
All right,
Michael, will I be able to get all these from you?
Oh, yeah. Yep. You'll get all the questions, comments, and such shortly. Here's one from Leanne, and I have a feeling I'm going to sneeze. Okay. Sorry about that. I don't think I've ever sneezed on line before, so that was pretty memorable. I love the Ball State website and I'm excited to use some of the resources, but as a young professional just starting my career, how can I apply some of this?
You know, I would encourage you to start with looking at the product around 10 in 10. It literally is a way just to get people thinking about, you know, what are 10, let's look at the state level. If you're looking at the state level and you want someone to come to a region, there have to be 10 great reasons to come to that region. And as you look at each of those 10 regions, there have to be 10 great places in each of those regions. And when you get to each place, there have to be at least 10 great things to do. And we've done some brainstorming around neighborhoods, or it could be in a workplace. You know, any setting that you want to think about. And we've had people, and we've done it with professionals and with community folks, but anytime I work with professionals, I say, okay, put your hat on where you're working with people in your community, and what are 10 things that you want to do? And then I give them all fake identities, like we may have someone who is a stay-home parent with a low income, and we may have someone who's a homeless veteran, and we may have, different kinds. We give people different roles, and we ask them to really stay within that role and think again about what they need, what kind of places they need, and just even role playing has helped us come up with different aspects that we may want to consider when we step out of our role as a professional. But going one step further, actually bringing those people together from your community or from your workplace and having the conversations around what they'd really like can help. And there's no magic number. If you read on Project for Public Spaces, there's no magic number to the 10, but it's interesting. So often in a workplace setting or in a community, we want to come up with one great place that really looks great and really put all our eggs in one basket, and we need to spread that. So I encourage you to look at the power of 10 and the thinking around 10. I think that can be a huge game changer in how you're practicing.
That's a great idea. And the idea of giving people different roles so that you're looking at those things through, you know, not everybody's looking at the same set pair of glasses. I like that ringtone. So, okay, anybody else questions? We got about a couple more minutes. How long has this been going on? Did you say that and I missed it?
You know, we've been working in this arena for about a year, but we're considering September 20th to be the start of the formal start to what we're doing. That's we had our inaugural conference on that day. We introduced the ideas to a lot of our not our partners, obviously, they've known about it for a while, but this is really new for us at Ball State too. Our Building Better Communities folks have been thinking about it for a long time. It's just it takes time to put things in place once an idea starts.
And I think it's the first time we've brought this under an umbrella and we've given it a name and an identity. I think there are folks who have been doing this work in isolation for years and years and years and trying to do this on their own. And this is a time that we're hoping to bring people together to give voice to this, to provide a place where we can interact and share resources either through the the website and or through face-to-face interaction. So we hope to have a continuing set of opportunities like this, other webinars, other face-to-face opportunities to share information and share resources. So the concepts themselves aren't new. I think what's new is bringing this all together and giving it some what of an identity under the primacy of place and helping to elevate this throughout the state.
Have other universities embraced this as Ball State has? And well, let's just go with that.
I think that there are wonderful folks at the other universities that are doing this same sort of thing. I think we may be the first ones to realize that we needed to bring this under some type of an umbrella and give it an identity. I can't think of another university yet in the state of Indiana that has given it a name and are bringing such a diverse group of people together. I think they might study it or look at it in isolation in maybe one of the colleges or the schools, but this is interdisciplinary, which is also somewhat a unique aspect to the work that we do here at Ball State.
And interestingly, I think there are organizations out there, especially economic development organizations, like the Economic Development Organization out of Michigan is doing some really amazing things around this placemaking concept. And I think universities might be involved in that, but it's not necessarily a university initiative.
I think that's headed by their tourism department. But early, as we were trying to decide what our website would look like, and I might mention that we feel like we've just taken the first baby steps towards this. So we're revealing this in its infancy. When we look at what the folks in Michigan are doing, there was a website that we looked at as a model, miplace.org. So those of you in Michigan, if you're not familiar with that as a resource, it's incredible. They've brought together events and other providers and resources themselves. So when we look at what we want to be when we grow up, we might want to look at some of the models that they've put in place in Michigan. So I would encourage you to take a look at that site as well.
And I'll add one more thing in that we're really at Ball State, while we want to share our resources nationally, we're really looking at the state of Indiana as our setting. And so we didn't look, we looked for resources outside the state, but we didn't really look at what universities outside the state were doing. We just looked within our own state. So we're probably not as familiar with, you know, if there are other university initiatives and you know about them, we would love to hear about them again to make connections.
Awesome. Well, you know, it seems to me, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Ball State alumni, but it seems to me that at Ball State, this is the perfect match between departments, and certainly the health wellness management needs to be a part of this. I think it's very exciting.
It is exciting, and like I say, I appreciate everything that our Building Better Communities group has done to help the academic side of, make it easier for the academic side of this to embrace the ideas and concepts and get the great work that we're doing recognized.
Well, super. Well, we are out of time, but just a side note, Jane, as always, let me know what I can do to help from over here in lovely MD, because I think it's a great idea. But thank you, all of you, so much for being here, and happy Friday. I'm glad you were here, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Michaela.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.